Inside Mac.
Welcome to the Inside Mac radio program. We take a lighthearted look at all things Macintosh. You're here with Scott Shepard and Brad Wright and our guest co-host in studio today, the legendary, the one, the only, Vincent Versace. Hello, Vincent.
Hello.
Hello, Brad. How are you?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, the Inside Mac show is brought to you by Micromat, makers of TechTool Pro 4, the preferred disk and system utility for Mac OS X. You can check them out at micromat.com. DVD-XDV, the coolest software for taking content off that you've created on a DVD and pulling it back off and using it in iMovie, Final Cut Pro, you name it. Any application that reads QuickTime can consume it and enjoy it. They got a brand new website. You can check them out over at dvdxdv.com. MCE Technologies, the place to get a brand new MacBook, MacBook Pro. You can upgrade your PowerBook, your iBook, your Power, your Pismo, whatever you want. These guys have all kinds of cool stuff. They got a brand new thing called an Opti Drive. This is what Vincent needs, okay? You take your optical drive out of your PowerBook, your MacBook Pro, and stick another hard drive in it. So you could have, in theory, 400 gigs in your PowerBook or your MacBook Pro, as long as you don't need the optical drive.
Oh, yeah.
And then you just put that drive that comes out of your laptop in an external case, and you carry it with you if you really need to read a CD. Pretty cool. Cool stuff. So you can check that out over at mcetech.com. The official storage provider of the Inside Mac radio program, FirmTech. If you're looking for the best true SATA backplane solution, no interconnect cables, slide out hot swappable trays, very cool stuff. Brad's been using one for quite a while.
Yeah, they're great.
That he actually bought.
They're awesome.
You paid for it with real money.
Yeah, I did. Oh, yes.
You spent really money? Cool.
I spent real money on it.
Yeah, so that's cool. So you can check these guys out. They have a really nice product, though. They have interface cards for the Express 34 slot for The MacBook Pros. They have SATA interface cards for the PowerBook G4 and G5s and all kinds of cool stuff. Check them out over at firmtech.com. And our media partners, the Popular Photography and Imaging Magazine, American Photo, Creative Pro, the official printers of the Inside Mac Show, Printing for Less.
Oh, dot com. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the digital production buzz of Philip Hodges.
Absolutely.
And all kinds of cool things. You can check all the stuff out over at InsideMacRadio.com. So, Vincent.
So, Scott.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Vince is going to be talking in a couple of different segments throughout the show about some cool things that are going on. We have a pretty nice lineup today, too, Brad and Vincent. We have Andy Schall, of course, coming on doing our design tip of the week.
Oh, yes.
We're going to talk about some cool Mac goodies for the holiday stuff coming up here. Because you still have
a few days. Yeah.
You have a few days to buy some goodies.
Yep.
So we're going to talk about some iPod goodies. We're going to have Russell Preston Brown on. The creative directory.
I'm sorry.
Directory? Directorer.
I'm sorry. It is the
Russell
Preston Brown.
The.
As we have a little Russell with us.
Is there only one?
Talking about Photoshop CS3 beta. Now, this is the first time that Adobe's actually given out the bag of crack before they ship the product, so they get you hooked first to make sure you spend that $12.95.
It's an amazing piece of software, I have to tell you.
Well, you've been playing with it because you're on the beta program, I believe, for Adobe.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
But you have played with it because it's now public beta, so I'm sure you played with it.
I've played with the public beta, and it is...
They have an interesting black and white plugin in there that I think very much resembles your technique.
It's an interesting black and white plugin, and they've done great inroads into improving the quality and ease of creating black and white images.
And I guess Bridge is a lot better, so this whole workflow with raw images is pretty cool.
The workflow is improved. The overall software is improved. There's a whole bunch of features that are in it that are quite amazing. And it's definitely a marked step improvement, and I'm very happy to be playing with it.
That is fun. So we're going to have Russell talking about that. In our second hour, we're going to have Philip Hodges doing the digital production buzz. We're going to have Rick Spellers on from Hewlett-Packard. Talking about some cool Mac things that HP's got going, some new printers. You know, they have a whole new line of inkjets that use a permanent pigment-based ink. And some of you have built-in photo spectrometers.
Oh, yeah, that's really nice, because that would allow you to use almost any paper.
What I'd like you to do is to say permanent pigment printing 20 times
fast. No, that's a big deal. Getting the ink to lay down and the measuring it back is really nice.
Yep. And then we're going to have, in the second hour, we're going to spend a bunch more time here with Vincent, besides chatting during the rest of the show, about his new book, Welcome to Oz. The cinematic approach to digital still photography using Photoshop. Very cool.
It's here.
Beautiful
book. We have a copy of it.
It is alive. You're listening to the Inside Mac radio program. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to unleash the power of DVD? With DVD-XDV, the power is within your grasp. DVD-XDV converts your DVDs into broadcast-quality video. Video clips from DVD-XDV are ready to use in iMovie, iDVD, or Final Cut Pro. To learn more, visit DVDXDV.com. Macintosh for the new millennium. This is Inside Mac.
Inside Mac. Inside Mac.
Welcome back to the Inside Mac Radio program. This part of the Inside Mac Radio show is brought to you by Micromat, makers of TechTool Pro 4 and the brand new Macworld Eddy. 2006 winner for a very cool product is their new Protégé. This is a FireWire-based device that you can boot your Mac, Intel, or PC, you know, PowerPC-based product of it and do repairs right off a FireWire little thumb drive.
Yeah, very nice.
Pretty cool. Ultra fast, a lot faster than the old CD Burton, you know,
yeah.
Booting up. Pretty cool. So you can check those guys out over at Micromat.com. So we were going to have Andy Shallon on the segment, but I think his Vonage has gone AWOL again. You ever use voice over IP, Vinny?
Voice over IP?
Yeah, like Vonage phone, you know, where your phone goes over your internet connection.
You mean, whenever I have a friend who does it from Australia or from the Fiji Islands, he's a doctor on Survivor, and it always, hello, mate, how's it going? And he'd go away.
So, right. You get this digital.
I use my trusty cell phone, which is surgically implanted to my ear.
Yeah. I don't know. So either way, we're not going to have a design tip today. We're going to have a live in-studio photography tip from Vincent.
We are.
Hey, it's lucky we have you here.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
We put him on the spot and make him work.
We have to talk about getting Texas and seafood, you know, and stuff like that.
So the photography tip of the day is use pixels, but don't let them use you. Thank you very much.
There you go.
All right. Well, all right.
That's what's missing.
The thing to keep in mind when you're holding a camera is the way in which you position your hand. Most people want to have it so that the palm of their hand is facing outward. And what I suggest you consider to do is to turn it so that the palm of your hand is facing inward on the barrel of the lens. Why? Because the lens, that hand, drives the boat. And if you look at that, if your hand is this way, it can only go that far. If your hand, the palm is facing out, it can move this way, which makes the camera unstable. So what happens is if you have an unstable holding of your camera, what occurs is you get shaky pictures. When you get shaky pictures, what do you blame? The camera, you, or the printer? The printer or the camera, and say, oh, it's a blurry print. So what I suggest is you get in the habit of holding it this way. Another thing that I do when I shoot, particularly when I'm shooting slow shutter speeds, is I breathe out, just like shooting a rifle, because you don't want to shake the camera. If you hold your breath, what occurs is you make your body rigid, and by making your body stiff and rigid, what happens is you cause the camera to shake. The more you know about the beginning, the more informed your decisions can be at the beginning about the middle, which is what you're going to do to the image, and you're in service of the outcome, which is the print. So the more you understand how it all works, the better print you can make.
That's cool.
That is very cool. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Because you do know about printing a little bit.
I know a thing or two about printing, yes.
You've printed something once in a while, yeah.
Once in a while. There's rumor has it that I have made an inkjet print or two.
Yes. Beautiful ones, I might add.
Yeah.
I think you're also an Epson Stylus Pro professional.
I'm an Epson Stylus Pro, and I was the original host of the Epson Print Academy.
Yeah, pretty cool stuff. And I was wrong. Andy Shallot is actually on the next segment. So this was a special open segment that we, you know, swindled you into talking on.
I just want to get to do the one thing I've always wanted to do.
Okay,
on
you can do whatever you want.
Expect that photographing tip to show up in an Adobe application somewhere in the future.
Yeah, soon.
It's like, oh my gosh, it's in the manual already. CS3.
It's all about making it better for everybody to be more creative. And I believe that what Adobe does, it's one of the most inspired pieces of software, both Photoshop and also Lightroom. I use both of them.
You're liking Lightroom, huh?
I am liking Lightroom.
What do you think about Lightroom over Aperture?
Yeah, Lightroom versus Aperture.
Now, I know that you're not you're not really an Apple guy. But I know you've probably seen
not
the product.
Under contract.
I'm not an Apple guy, but I'm rotten to the core. Is that what you're saying?
There you go.
No, Aperture is a beautiful application.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty to look at. And it's pretty to look at. Lightroom, what I like about Lightroom is just the whole level of I can make PDFs, I can make web pages, I can organize, I can do slideshows. And it's far more along the lines of what I want that type of image editor to be. And I'm keen on it. Now, for my raw processing, I do Nikon Capture, because I'm a Nikon shooter.
Yeah, I love Nikon.
But
it's good stuff.
You know, it's like one of the versions, you can now launch your own pixel editor or what you want to do. So what it's becoming is it's becoming a conduit. One of the big issues in digital imaging, I feel, is that we have many, many images, or many, many engines, rather, but no conduits to those engines. And I'm seeing Lightroom as being the conduit between whatever you use to process your raw processors, edit the image, and then go into Adobe Photoshop. So it's a much more fluid way of working, and I'm rather impressed with what they did.
Hey, you're listening to Inside Mac Radio. We're here with Vincent Versace talking about some cool photography tips, and Vince is all going to be speaking with us in the second hour about his new book and some of these techniques in his book called Welcome to Oz, The Cinematic Approach to Digital Photography with Photoshop. Your tip now, this workflow, okay? So there's a lot of things, though, you can do. Let's say you're a photojournalist, and I think you were on the show.
Oh, yeah,
you were on
yeah.
our other program, Inside Digital Photo. We had Deanne Fitzmaurice on, a Pulitzer Prize winner, photographer from the San Francisco Chronicle, and talking about photography and journalistic photography. You don't really need using Aperture and or Lightroom. You don't need Photoshop if you're a photojournalist, because really, you don't need to really use Photoshop, because you're not supposed to correct these images more than just a basic tonal adjustment or something of the sort. So do you really need Photoshop anymore?
Well, I think it depends upon if you're like a wedding photographer, you probably don't have the time to go into Photoshop and do major, major work on it. So it's actually wedding and maybe photojournalism. Maybe you just don't have the time to be able to do it.
Well, I think even though with the journalistic approach to photojournalism, you're not supposed to modify these photos.
Well, you're supposed to put the flaming plane to come straight down into the
or
village,
the extra billows of smoke.
Yeah,
you know,
there you go.
Hold on 1 second. I don't think you've quite backed me into a corner yet, but let me dig myself out. All right. First off, I think it's really, really important to keep in mind what you are. Are you a photographer or are you an image maker? And I think one of the difficulties that we face coming up, both philosophically and creatively, is that we are becoming more image makers than photographers. And part of that is that the technology is so aiding in our creativity that we have the potential of becoming very sloppy or lazy. Or, case in point,
I can fix it in Photoshop, y'all.
Please. Photoshop is not a verb.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes.
It's a noun. The verb is you. You're the verb when it comes to that. So if you walk into taking a picture, and in your decisions about taking a picture is the post manipulation process, that's a valid decision. But if you walk in because you took a picture and you didn't get it right in the camera, and you say, oh, fix it in Photoshop, don't talk to me.
It's like we were talking earlier about how people shoot full frame and they say they just crop into that frame.
I don't need y'all to frame that shot. I'm just going to get me one of them big old sensors, and I'll just be able to cut it out whatever I need.
Well, but here's the thing.
Just point it in the right direction. I got it in a nice image.
Right. If you're only taking it out of the center, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you're cropping into it, your 12 megapixel camera becomes a what?
Three.
A 3 megapixel
three
camera.
Three or two, yeah.
So you want to compose in frame, which is one of the ways that cinematic approach to taking pictures is. Cinematographers do not have the luxury of cropping in frame. You are responsible for every millimeter of that frame. You are responsible to make every last pixel sing. That's your job. And it's more important with digital than it is with film, because of the way resolutions work. So you want to fill that frame, and you want to make sure that when you're shooting it, that every millimeter of that frame is filled and you compose in it, that you use that as your canvas, that's your window to shoot. Now,
we're to a break, Vincent.
I gathered that, and I'm full of hot air. So
No. This is good stuff. We're going to talk
awesome
about this
stuff,
towards
man.
The bottom of the hour. Next up here, we're going to have Andy Schaller with his design tip of the week. And then we'll be talking about more things about digital images and great stuff on your Mac. We'll be right back.
Good morning, my good fellow. Welcome to Smith's Computer and Robot Repair. How may I be of service?
Yes, my Mac has crashed. Big time. I was about to save the annual report when...
Whenever my systems are not operating correctly, Tech Tool will always find the problem.
Excuse me.
Quiet, you platinum-plated nincompoop.
I'm sorry. You were saying?
Anyway, my Mac totally crashed, and if I don't get this data back, my boss is gonna freak.
If it were not for Tech Tool Pro, my memory banks would have been lost in...
Silence, you motorized monstrosity!
It is not necessary that I stay here and be in insulted.
Wait, robot, don't go. Are you telling me this Tech Tool Pro software can save me a trip to the repair shop?
Affirmative. I kid you not.
Don't listen to him, sir. No software product can match the technical skill and computer savvy of Smith's Computer and Robot Repair.
Baloney. That does not compute.
So, robot, where can I get this Tech Tool Pro?
From Micromat in Windsor, California.
Excellent. Thanks for the info.
You are welcome.
Find out more about Tech Tool Pro by visiting Micromat.com.
I need a vacation.
Coast to coast and around the world, Scott Shepard is Inside Mac.
Welcome back to the Inside Mac radio program. This part of the Inside Mac show is brought to you by DVD XDV. If you've created some great software, burned it up to a DVD, and then you need to pull it back off and reuse it and want to have something that's very high quality, very nice, that you can bring back into Final Cut Pro, DVD Studio Pro.
Or theatrical release, the 35mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, people have done that.
Yeah, pull off a DVD and then have it,
go out
reverse
telescene
to laser
back
burned
to theatrical
on film.
Release. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, it's been done.
That's all you need.
Yep.
DVD XDV.
That's it.
You can check it out over at DVDXDV.com. Right now we're here with Andy Shallot. Andy is our Mac design out-of-the-box author. His excellent book available over at Amazon.com, or I think you can get it from the Peach Pit guys. Andy Shallot, how you doing?
Okay. Are the holidays over yet?
No. They haven't even begun. We got a few more days.
You have yet to begin to shop, Andy.
No kidding. You know, I've been doing some shopping online, and I got some things for my kids from Apple. And the one thing I did notice about Apple, and I got to give them kudos for this, because this is something that goes to user interface and the whole idea that they dedicate so much time to how the user works through their stuff and their day. This is something that I've never seen on anybody else's site, and that is when you check your order status, you know, you make your order and you say FedEx or whatever it is, and it's delivered, they have a little thing next to where you check your tracking number, just to the right of it. It says print, like a printable sign sheet, where you can print out a PDF that has your order number on and everything. You can print it out and you sign it for FedEx. You tape it to your door, so if you're not there, you can give instructions as to where to put it.
That's cool.
That's very good.
I think that's such a subtle difference in the way that they think about things, that they think about the whole user experience. And the idea that you know, I missed a package just the other day on another carrier, not FedEx. And so I had to wait for the next day, at which time the person that was for was gone.
It's serious, too, if you have kids and that extreme Elmo with the, you know, whatever thing, or the super,
exactly,
you know, whatever doll
extreme
accessory.
Elmo.
That's true. That's the hot season. Extreme Elmo. I don't know what it does, but it's extreme Elmo. And if you miss that, you're gonna hear it as a parent. Yeah, you're gonna be in trouble.
But what that
kids
what
will
that
be in therapy for years.
But what that is really goes back to what we're always saying about how does someone who is the client or the customer, who is the viewer, who is the person who is the end user of your stuff as a designer, their design ideas go right through to delivery of product. I think that is a great thing. It's a great lesson for everybody who's designing out there, and every company that has something like that, have the form so that it's just that extra step that I was very, very impressed with. So
that is a good little festive tip.
There you go. In the meantime, I found something very cool online the other day called iGrowl iChat.
Really?
Growl iChat. I'm sorry, Growl iChat.
What's this
little thing? Go to Growl iChat. What it does is it's a little plugin that goes onto your system folder, which is always dangerous, or rather it goes into your system prefs. But what it does is it gives you a heads up as to what's going on with applications that are in the background. So, for instance, for iChat, if you want to know who's online, who's getting offline or whatever, while you're busy working Photoshop, all of a sudden it pops up a translucent thing over the dock on the bottom, and it shows their icon and says, has signed in or has signed out. It's not limited only, though, to iChat. It's to iTunes, to other applications, where if you want to know what things are going on in the background, if there's a change in status, this thing will give you the heads up to it. It's a very cool little thing, and it's just a simple download. You can find it at growliChat.com.
Wow.
Cool little thing. You got to play with that one.
Andy, we got about 20 seconds. How do we get more information on Andy Shallot and your great books?
Well, first, you got to come to Macworld Expo and see me speak, because I'm much funnier in person.
Oh, okay.
and then go to shallot.com.
That's true. At least you won't have to worry about Vonage yet. Mac. So, there you go, Andy Shallot. Check it out. Shallot.com. You're listening to the Inside Mac radio program. We will be right back.
This is Bob, Dr. Mac Levitis. If you need troubleshooting, training, advice, or technical support for your Mac, we can help. We can resolve most Mac problems quickly, painlessly, and inexpensively, and we guarantee it. Plus, our cool internet-enabled remote control software lets us work with you no matter where in the world you happen to be. For more info or to schedule an appointment, visit www.boblevitis.com or give us a call at 408-627-7577.
Informal.
Informative.
In front of the industry.
Inside Mac is on.
Welcome back to the Inside Mac radio program. This part of the Inside Mac show is brought to you by MC Technologies. This place to get a brand new MacBook, MacBook Pro upgrades for your PowerBook, G4, G5, you name it. Check these cats out over at mcetech.com. So before the break, last segment, we were talking with Vincent about photojournalists and do you really need Photoshop? You know, you can do image editing now. You can do it in preview in the Mac because there's a whole little pop-up that lets you adjust TIFF images and stuff like that. You can do this in Aperture and you can do it, of course, in Lightroom. So do you need Photoshop?
Well, you're also going to be able to do some of that even in Vista when it releases. I mean, so all the operating systems are building in technologies that will allow you to do basic image editing. As to whether or not you need Photoshop, let me be very, very clear. I think that Adobe Photoshop is probably about the most inspired piece of software ever written. And with regards to it, there is always a place for Photoshop. What the issue is that it's designed to be an Emery board, not a jackhammer. And frequently what we've been forced to do is to use it as a jackhammer. And what's beautiful about it is that this Emery board can do that. However, with the vast majority of what needs to be done with an image, which is contrast, light and dark, and saturation, color cast removal, we can offload that to other applications. The best place to be working on a file is at the raw data state, raw files being the cleanest form that that data will ever be. So yeah, there is a different positioning of where Photoshop is going to evolve, and you're seeing that in the creation of softwares like Nikon Capture NX or what's going on with Adobe Lightroom or Photoshop Lightroom, as I think it's now being called, which is just an elegant piece of software, which is taking off some of the heavy lifting from Photoshop and allowing Photoshop to do what it's designed to do.
Well, that's one of the things that Photoshop doesn't do very well is look at, or a lot of it, or, you know, that's why you need that kind of software. It doesn't allow you to look across a lot of different images and organize that. And that's why essentially it's becoming more of a specialized application market. You have applications which organize and then feed into one mm-hmm. and another. And
well, it's why I choose Lightroom, because it's so seamless of an interface between the two, and I'm familiar with it. And the thing about workflow is that magic word that everybody thinks is a big secret something, it's really about how to develop a personal efficiency. So if I have keyboard commands and things that I have from one application that travel over, that's less that I have to keep in my head, and it makes me more time efficient. The goal is to get away from the computer. I mean, make no mistake, all those quarters you spent as a kid playing Missile Command, they were just training for Photoshop. I mean, the computer is the adult video game. So where would you rather be as a creative? If you're a photographer, I would rather be behind the camera taking pictures. And I want to make my flow of the middle, the work I do on an image, as efficient as possible. So if I can have the conduits that connect the engines of creativity, my pixel editor to my image editor, Photoshop being my image editor, what I use, my RAW processor, which is Capture NX, being my pixel editor, not to say that Adobe Camera Raw is any less piece of software, is whatever you choose to use, you want to have that pathway. And what I'm seeing is that there is finally an evolution of those conduits, which I applaud Adobe on developing Lightroom.
Well, one of the things it also would mention is the fact is that you'll also get, as you go through that workthrough flow of all Adobe, you'll get a consistent image look. If you go from one application's raw, like say, for instance, conversion process, you might say, for instance, like if you open up a Nikon Capture and you say export to Photoshop, the image will look very different in Photoshop. But at least that's been what my experience, then it will show up in Capture. And that's because of a lot of the color management changes. So does that give you a lot of efficiency the same color space?
There are color management. The color engines are slightly different. Mm-hmm. But what I tend to do is I look at where am I going to do the vast majority of my image editing on that image, and that will be the application I will primarily stay in. Now, I do a lot of work in Photoshop. And so, you know, and I do a lot of work in Capture NX. So I find that in this iteration of Capture NX and Photoshop, the gap is very...
It's been closed.
It's closed.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Inside Mac Show. We'll be right back.
Creative Planet Communities present the Digital Production Buzz.
What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening.
Production. Post-production. Distribution.
What's really happening now and in your digital future? The Digital Production Buzz, live Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific. Archives and podcast immediately after.
Momentum for your Macintosh.
Scott Shepard
is Inside Mac.
You wish to leave a record of your call.
Welcome back to the Inside Mac radio program. We take a lighthearted look at all things Macintosh. You're here with Scott Shepard, Brad Wright, and in studio today with us, our guest co-host and photographer extraordinaire, Vincent Versace.
That would be me.
Yes.
Hello, Vincent. How are you?
I'm in San Francisco, so life is good, man. I'm not in L.A., man.
We're talking about that being the visual armpit of the world.
I didn't choose the word armpit, but it did start with an A. No, you know, L.A.'s been good to me. It's a good place to travel from.
Yeah.
The weather's nice.
Yeah. But about the only place you can really take some, I mean, because you like landscape, you know, photography as well, natural light, of course. But it's very hard to find good landscapes to shoot unless you're by the ocean in L.A.
Well, I can't believe I'm going to defend L.A.
Defend L.A. Give L.A. its due.
When I did a lot of natural light portraiture, and the beauty of L.A. is the fact that it's mostly sunny. It's like 9 months of sunshine and then 3 months of rain.
Mm-hmm.
And so for that, it was great. And it's the beauty of L.A. is that there's no glass ceiling. But aside from that, the physical beauty of Los Angeles is located in San Francisco. So it's a nice place to live, but I'm a San Franciscan. So
You're coming back up here and you get inspired.
This is my home, you know? It's
stuff.
Like, I'm from here, so what do you want me to sit there and say? I've been banished down to Los Angeles.
Yes. Purgatory.
That would be a word.
Okay, so back to our conversation of, I'm a photojournalist. I don't need no stinking Photoshop. I got Lightroom. I got Aperture. I got a ton of programs I can adjust tonal quality and exposure and saturation, you know?
It depends on what the rules of engagement are, and it depends on what it is that you're doing, and it depends on what the needs are. All right, as a digital photographer and a digital fine art printer, I would never think to shoot or to capture in the sRGB color space, right?
Right.
S standing for standard RGB, but should stand for any nasty word that begins with the letter S. However, if you're doing portrait social, wedding, or you're doing high school pictures, the sRGB color space is actually a viable choice. Why is it a viable choice? Because of the type of machine that you're going to only sees sRGB, and it does a really good out-of-the-box job on skin tone. Great. You have to know what the application is. Now, if I'm in straight photojournalism and I've got to shoot the shot, crank it, and get it out, I'm going to set my camera to shoot RAW plus JPEG. Why? Because the JPEG is most likely going to be the image that's used on the wire, but if I'm recording history, I want to make sure that I have the best possible version of it, which will be the RAW data state. Now, I can set in the camera basic camera functions and get that out to the image editor that needs to get it onto the pub super fast. That's workflow efficient. I also have that RAW file so that I can come back and look at it. Now, what we're seeing is that more and more of the heavy lifting is being put off of Photoshop and being put into other applications like Lightroom, like Nikon Capture NX, like Adobe Camera Raw, or the way in which they're implementing raw processing in Lightroom, or even Aperture, which mm-hmm. is a beautifully designed piece of software. I prefer Lightroom from what I've seen over Aperture because I think it's more of the along the lines of the way I work, and it affords me the ability to make PDFs to give to a client. Okay, it affords me the ability to make a web page, a slideshow from my image editing application in the sense of what it is I'm going to pick the images of that I'm going to use. So that's helpful to me.
Well, one thing that's very important is like how much time does it take up as your job? How much time do you actually sit at the computer versus actually shooting? typically?
A lot. I mean, I have images. I have one image that has taken me 3 weeks to produce, which is a 23-image panorama, and it's a lot of time to work. Now, with offloading some of the work into raw processing software, I'm finding that my Photoshop time is cut in half to two-thirds, which is great, and my image editing time is cut in about half. So overall,
you're talking about real money.
It's efficiency.
The time you're sitting at the computer is not time that you can be spending shooting photos.
Right. So what's happening is you're seeing that the software evolve. I mean, originally, Photoshop was not designed to be a photographic editing software. It was a graphic arts tool. It is evolving into a photo tool because the nature of imaging is evolving. And for right now, it is the de facto camera operating system. Now, you're seeing other players come on the market that are working towards addressing the needs of the photographer. So for a compositor, for doing layers and all sorts of stuff, there is no other answer other than Photoshop. For creativity, is no other answer. Now, for getting the file to the point where I can polish it, okay, there are other softwares that are stepping up to the plate. See, I live in the world of 2%, which means that I'm always looking for a 2% quality increase wherever I can get it, because all artifacting is cumulative. So I tend to work and develop workflows where I can get the maximum amount of image with the least amount of artifacting. Where is the best place to work on a file? The raw state. The raw file is that icky looking flat yellow magenta-ish thing that sometimes you look at and going,
it comes out.
You look at it, I suck as a photographer. That file is the cleanest the data will ever be. Everything you're doing is clipping data. You are creating visually appealing artifacts. So the key is to minimize the amount of artifact with one thought in mind. You are always in service of the print.
You are.
That's it.
You are.
Print really is everything.
We talked about that on Inside Digital Photo program last time was, you know, everybody takes all these digital images, but they don't print anything. It's not the same of looking at the stuff on a screen. It just doesn't get it.
Well, the big difference is it's like the screen is transmissive. The print is reflective, so it handles light differently.
Well, you know, actually, what's also very interesting about it is that your raw form, if you have a 12-bit raw, you're talking about a dynamic range of about 4,000 to 1.
Right.
And as you step down in actual print, the dynamic range is much, much reduced from that. I know that when you get to the computer or you get to basically a computer screen, you're looking at the best at like 255 to 1 at very best case dynamic range. Print paper is going to have even less. And so what you're doing is you're just taking a big step down the actual dynamic range of that photo as you get down to a print. So you have a lot of choices you have to make.
Right. And everything you're doing it is removing data. Mm-hmm. The trick, the key to doing this is the way in which you do things to the image will minimize artifacting. One of the things that I do, I separate out contrast and sharpness. That I will not sharpen a layer that I've added contrast to, that I will keep them different. Here's why. Contrast is the ratio between light and dark. Unsharp masking, actually the Craik O'Brien Corn Sweet Edge Effect or Illusion, is introducing basically contrast to the edge of either side of a pixel. So what do we know about contrast and sharpening? That they're very, very similar. They're different, but if I add sharpness to a contrasted image, I run the risk of really, really, really enhancing the artifact of sharpening,
yes,
or unsharpening.
Yeah.
So what I'll do is I will do aesthetic sharpening, which is I will move the eye by adding a little bit of sharpening to the image before
so
I do the
really
global.
It's about, really what it comes down to is about how the eye is going to move through the image.
Well, I'm glad you brought this up. I'm actually, you know, it's funny, you finish a book, right? So what do you do?
You write another one.
You think you learned your lesson, right? So I've started writing my second book, which is going to be called Believing is Seeing. And what it was based on is every time I've talked about this book, what I hear somewhere in the interview or afterwards when I'm talking to you, oh, if I only had your eye. And I don't know what to do with that because I've got two eyes, you got two eyes, you got two eyes. So we got six eyes in here, right?
Right.
The difference is knowing what you're looking at. So I'm working with a student as one of the guinea pigs on this book, and we're up at the Huntington Gardens shooting, and about 30 minutes into shooting, she comes up to me and she goes, I'm really all rosed out. And I'm, what? She says, I can't shoot any more roses. I can't shoot any more roses. It wasn't until she said she's tired of shooting roses that I realized I was shooting roses. I had almost 600 shots in that period of time. And what I was looking at was light, gesture, color, shape, contrast, in focus to blur, focus points. I didn't see the rose. What I saw was...
You saw just all the data surrounding the rose.
I saw pretty.
Of all of the, yeah.
And so what I've been working with, and I don't know how to articulate this, so forgive me if I'm like sounding like, you know, snatch the pixel out of my palm.
Kind of. Yes, grasshopper.
Is don't see the rose.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the obvious thing. It's like, you know that's a rose, right? Well, what about that rose is the most telling thing? The gesture, the shape. Or here's another one that... knowing what you're looking at. One of the most common misconceptions is what focus is and what depth of field is. That there's a belief that the greater the aperture, the greater the area of what is in focus. That's not true. There's only going to be one area of focus, and that is the plane upon which the lens is focused on. Anything that travels through that plane, that will be in focus. What depth of field is the varying level of acceptable out of focus. It's knowing what you're looking at defines what you're going to do.
Vincent, very good. We're going to continue this after the break. You're listening to the Inside Mac radio program. You're here with Scott Shepard, Brad Wright, Vincent Versace. You can find out more information on Vincent's work over at
www.versacephotography.com.
We'll be right back.
If you want to keep up with the world of Macintosh, there's only one place that will provide everything you need to know, and always first. MacMinute.com is a leading source for up-to-the-minute Mac news. Updated 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, MacMinute has all the news and industry information weeks before the magazines. Why be the last to know when Mac news breaks? Visit MacMinute.com.
Inside your life,
business,
your home,
inside
your world.
This is Inside Mac
with Scott Shepard.
With Scott Shepard.
Welcome back to the Inside Mac radio program. This part of the Inside Mac radio show is brought to you by FirmTech, the official storage provider of the Inside Mac radio program. Very cool, true SATA backplane. No interconnect cables, no problems.
Basically, you turn it on, it's going to work every single time.
Put a drive in a tray, try to slide the tray in the enclosure, turn it on, and dude, you got some really fast honking storage for your movies, for your photography, for your music, whatever. It's very cool stuff. Check them out over at FirmTech. It's F-I-R-M-T-E-K, FirmTech.com. We're here with Vincent Versace. Talking about welcoming people to Oz. He's got a new book.
We're not talking about Dorothy and the little munchkins.
No, we're talking about some, we're geeking out on photo stuff. And we, you know, I guess the original question I brought up was, do you need Photoshop when you have Lightroom and Aperture? And I guess you do.
You do. It depends, again, on the application.
What you're doing. You can get, you now, let's not, say if I'm really budgeted, let's say I need to shoot paper. I need to shoot some photos for a school paper, or if I'm in a small town deal and I just ain't got the money and I can buy one piece of software.
If you're stranded on a desert island and you could only have one piece of software,
Marianne over Ginger.
Yeah. There you go.
I want Marianne.
The thing being here is, I guess if you only had a couple $100 and you just need to do some basic adjustments that stick true to the photojournalist.
If I had way, to do it, okay, you really, all right, fine.
Okay.
We're backing him into the corner.
I'd probably buy Aperture. If I was a Mac guy and if I was using a PC,
It depends on the case. If I was a Nikon shooter, I'd buy Capture NX.
That's all you need.
That's the thing.
I'm not going to say it's not all that you need. But in that case, narrow of a definition of a thing. I feel like I'm in the life, not the life of Ryan. What's the ones like Spamalot, right?
Right.
Bite you, right?
Yeah. I mean the Black Knight.
Yeah, the Black Knight. You got me. You silly knigget. You've got me backed into a corner. No, it's like if you had to pick one application, and what you're going to do is white point, black point, contrast, color cast out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that is all you're going to do because you're a photojournalist, and yeah, you need to do a reasonably decent black and white conversion that is spectrally based, not luminance based. Then if you're a Nikon shooter,
Nikon Capture
would be your better call. But if you're not a Nikon shooter, then you want to take a look at Lightroom or Photoshop. And if you had to pick one thing to drop your bucks on because you want the most overall bang for your buck because of growing into the software, then you take a look at Photoshop. Don't buy your technology the same way we build freeways, which is for perceived need, not projected need. And that would be my thing. It's always like, buy your last camera first. Don't buy the, oh, this is all I need. No, buy the camera. It scares the absolute bejesus out of you.
Yeah.
Or as close as your wallet can afford to scaring the absolute bejesus out of you. You know, skip lunch.
Yeah. Brad wants that EOS 1D Mark II in.
Well, I'm starting to rethink that. You know, I've been talking to Vincent here, and yeah, you know, it's kind of like one of those things is that we're going to the full frame versus crop sensors. And a lot of the images I've seen come out of full frame cameras, they're just purple fringing and garbage around the edges. And you get very sharp.
I think actually, you know, it's really interesting about this, and we're talking about aperture. Vincent Versace and Kevin Ames had this discussion about full frame APS-C size sensor versus depth of field. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
This is at Photo Plus last year when they announced we were waiting. We were, all three of us were waiting in line to get into the Apple gig. Because remember, we went to the Apple thing. And we'll say that for the next hour, but...
Yeah, I remember that. Kevin's a good guy.
Back to the whole thing. Do you need a full frame sensor, I guess?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
And I'll give you my thoughts on why.
We'll talk about that later. You're listening to the Inside Mac Radio Program. You're here with Scott Shepard, Brad Wright, Vincent Versace. We'll be back with more great things about your Mac, digital imaging, you name it. It's all here.
Do you want to find Macintosh software updates faster? Do you want to do this without paying a yearly fee or a site bogged down with tons of advertising? Do you want your software update site to offer you a free membership featuring custom watch lists, email update notifications, custom layouts, and more? Do you want to have the latest 15 Macintosh software updates streamed to your menu bar? Now, do you really want to know who this great website is for the best Macintosh software updates on the planet? It's MacUpdate.com. Check out MacUpdate. Visit www.macupdate.com.
Inside Mac.
Welcome back to the Inside Mac Radio Program. This part of the Inside Mac Radio Show is brought to you by our media partners of Popular Photography and Imaging Magazine. You can find out more information about this great publication that's been around for 70 years. Very cool stuff. Check them out over at popphoto.com. You're here with Scott Shepard, Brad Wright, and the legendary digital photographer, and I mean photographer, not image maker, Vincent Versace. How you guys doing?
Better now.
We're doing good, man. It's pretty cool. We can just do like another 24 hours, you know, just with Vincent here. I mean,
we're just geeking out on photography stuff.
Pretty,
so, you know,
this is one of these
holiday issues of Inside Mac, and you know, we're just having fun because everybody's going to get a lot of new imaging, new cameras for the holidays.
Well, I have kids and I see it more in school, you know, going to school events and stuff, which I've been going to, you know, because the Christmas shows, it's part of the season where all the kids go out and make shrill singing at Christmas shows.
You have three kids, right? One of each?
No, just two.
Oh.
One of each. you know, what's funny is that's a good one. what's really true is that you see a lot more people getting digital SLRs this year. I mean, I see a lot more digital SLRs out there. I see a lot more people carrying really bigger cameras.
Oh, no.
And that's an interesting trend that's, you know, used to be just point and shoot. They try to make images with these cameras that just have terrible optics, really slow shutter lag, all these kind of issues. But now you see parents carrying bigger gear.
Here's what it comes down to, okay, I think. Is it the first iteration, everybody went out, and I'm going to buy a point and shoot because that's all I need. That's what I had. I had that old point and shoot. But the problem was when you put film in the camera, do me a favor, mm-hmm. count to four.
One, two, three, four.
You just spent $20 if you were shooting film and processing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you make $20 an hour, let's say, for a living. How many times are you going to shoot that fast?
Yeah.
I'm asking you in 4 seconds to burn off an hour of your life in which you might not get anything. You're going to do that the one time. Now, with digital, you spent the money. So what is happening is the first iteration was everyone out and bought their digital point and shoot, and then they realized, oh, man, what's this delay? This is a I don't have to spend any money on film. I can put it in the camera. So this next wave is everybody is the democratization of photography, which I'm all for. I believe the next Michelangelo is going to be, for lack of a better term, a soccer mom.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that the next Mozart is going to be somebody that's just got out of high school. I believe that because the tools allow so much creative expansion, that's what you're starting to see. It's why you're seeing people get more and more DSLRs, because, wait a minute, my vision has been limited by my technology. What happens if my vision is not limited by my technology? Okay, which I think is just wonderful. I bring it on. More competition is better.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, what you actually see is that you have people doing more, you know, you see more people, more consumers of things like Photoshop, of like these, all of these new consumers coming into this space that need image editing tools, workflow tools, and need training. And so you're seeing just I mean, what's going to happen as you move, because people that had point and shoots weren't going to spend a lot of time tweaking the image. I mean, there wasn't a lot you could do, but when you have shooting raw with digital SLRs, you have all of these things start, you know, there's going to spend more time behind the camera working these things.
Well, it's the whole thing that with technology, with digital technology, the promise.
Yeah.
And then you can do this, and then, but you have to learn how to do that.
Yeah.
And so the thing to keep in mind, one of the things I think is important is a misnomer that we have been taught, all of us, which is practice makes perfect. Practice doesn't make perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect. You have to practice at practicing, which is what the beauty of the digital revolution is you can shoot and shoot and shoot and get better because you can chimp. You can look at the screen and go, oh, there it is. And I think that is what we're
It's hard to look at a screen, though, and say that's a nice image, because you look at a screen and it looks cool and you stick it in your PowerBook or your whatever, and it's like, oh, my God, that's nasty.
No, but the thing you have to keep in mind is that what you're looking at is what is an intermediary file.
True. Hey, you're listening to the Inside Mac radio program. Next up here, we're going to be talking with Philip Budges, the Digital Production News of the Week. We'll be right back.
Thanks so much for listening to Inside Mac Radio. Isn't this great? Hey, it's David Lawrence, and I'd love if you would listen to my podcasts as well. I've got two of them. One is a podcast for my countdown show, the Net Music Countdown. You can get it at feeds.feedburner.com/NMC. And then I have a second one for those of you that listen to online tonight or the David Lawrence show. We've got the nightly podcast, and that you can pick up at feeds.feedburner.com/PN. So there's two of them for you. And now, back to more of Inside Mac Radio.
Macintosh for the new millennium.
This is Inside Mac.
Welcome back to the Inside Mac Radio program. This part of the Inside Mac show is brought to you by Popular Photography and Imaging Magazine, and of course, mainly this segment, American Photo Magazine.
Yeah.
You can check them out over at AmericanPhotoMag.com or PopPhoto.com. Vincent, what would you say American Photo is? It's more of a creative, artsy, technique-y type.
I would say that American Photo, for me, American Photo Magazine was always the magazine I dreamed of being in, and I got to be in it with the Mission Series project that I did, and it was like I died and went to heaven.
It was it was like, before I die, I want to be in this magazine.
Right. Now it's like, I want a cover.
Yeah.
You know?
Now it's like, you're going to the next level.
No, it's just, for me, it's always been, that's the magazine. That's the, where I want to see where the trends are, what's going on. What pop photography is more of the nuts and bolts, brass tacks.
Gearhead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, lasers down, lenses, the $1 million test lab.
Yeah. Right. And it's, okay, and that's what you go to that for. But American Photo is about, well, what's the scene? What's going on?
Okay,
right.
But we got poor Philip Hodges on the line, and we better cut to him.
Do we have Philip with us?
We got Philip with us,
We
yes.
do have Philip with Philip. Us.
Hey, yeah. Philip, how you doing?
Philip Hodges, the digital production buzzmeister.
Yeah. We've got to deal with like 30 of those for images every second.
Yeah, these video guys. See, now we're talking, we have an image maker with us.
We've got a buzzmeister.
Yes.
Yes.
Hello, Philip, how you doing?
I'm well connected. Thank you very much.
Yes.
first thing that's most exciting to me this week is the Blackmagic Intensity card is now shipping. Now, this was announced at IBC, the European NAB, and this is unusual because it's an HDMI input, which really most people see as being for connecting your new high-def tuner or your high-def playback or box to your monitor, but there's a couple of these cameras are now coming out with HDV, and back in September, it wasn't all that exciting because the HDV camcorders that were available were single CMOS or single CCD devices. So, you know, good but not great for anything heading towards professional production. But now the V1U that we talked about last week, the new HDV camcorder from Sony, it has an HDMI out connector. So we've now got a really nice, sweet camera with an HDMI out And the big advantage is that's an uncompressed connector. So, yeah, you're recording on tape in HDV, but you're coming...
But the question is, though, I mean, is it really truly uncompressed? I mean, is it not really, it's not truly uncompressed like HDSI is? I mean, or is it really, you know, I mean, is the format really, because I always think of HDMI as being just simply as like a video level interface. So it just tells you where the pixels are, where HDSI is more of a clock and a synchronization. I mean, I haven't looked enough into the interface. Is it that compatible, the two?
Yeah, it's full uncompressed from the deck. And, of course, then you can compress it to an editing format if you want. You could use, you know, DVC Pro HD if you're working in HD. It automatically switches between 1080 HD, 720 HD, PAL, or NTSC.
Can you go to a flash or hard drive, or do you have to go straight to tape on that?
Oh, no, this is to hard drive.
Yeah,
oh,
you'd wow. have to you have to go to a pretty you have to go to a RAID array because you're talking about an uncompressed image that's going to coming at you at. At a high resolution.
It's optionally uncompressed. If you want to work uncompressed, that's great. But, you know, that does have problems because, as you said, you need a really fast RAID or you need some pretty serious storage there, just a lot of storage.
I guess the main thing is, though, is if you have one of these Sony cameras and these ones that are shooting this MPEG-4 content, AVC or AVC or whatever it's called, whatever this new...
Well, yeah, that would be a way. I've actually not checked to see if they have HDMI connectors, but I guess they do.
The Sony one.
But you're going to need a SATA. You're going to need a Firmtech SATA RAID for this project.
Well, there you go. No, the reason why I asked, I just finished producing 4 DVDs, mm-hmm. okay, and we shot, or 6 DVDs. We shot the first 3 on DV cam and tape, and and then we shot the second 3 high def, and it's like
HDV or did you shoot them in
720p?
Oh, okay.
And we used the Panasonic, which was all flash card.
Oh, right. Okay. And HVX 200.
Yeah. And what was great about it was we're slapping these cards in, and no download time in comparison to converting to tape, and no generation loss. And the future of this is hooking it up to a hard drive and just burning it to the hard drive. So if what you're saying is that it can do that.
We can have an argument on that because there's some issues around that. What this lets you do is to come off the HDV tape or off the AVC HD, the consumer format, and bring it in and then either store it uncompressed or recompress it to an editing codec. So you could go to something like the DVC Pro HD 422 codec on the hard drive. So you're actually coming off a tape or off a memory stick, and this saves you actually going to a video signal. You're not going, you know, HD SDI is a video signal. It's not a direct digital copy, unlike what you can do through
right.
the
HDMI. See, that's what I was thinking of, because HDSDI would be like more of a direct digital copy, and HDMI...
You're around the wrong way. The HDMI is a direct digital copy.
Right.
HDSDI is doing a... there is signal processing happening there. So it's not a direct digital copy.
So HDMI allows you to come out as a direct... So HDMI is a preferred interface, although it doesn't have the range of HDSDI. It would be more preferable. You get better image quality coming off HDMI.
Yeah, and the codec I'd really love to go to when it's supported on the Intel Macs and be available in a QuickTime format would be Avid's DNX HD codecs, because they're really sweet. And you can go to 10-bit version of that, because, you know, your DVC Pro HD is only an 8-bit codec.
That's correct. Yeah.
So this is pretty sweet. You know, you throw two of these cards into a Mac Pro, put in 2 V1Us or other cameras with the HDMI connector, add on their new software, their On-Air 2.0, and you've got an HD Studio, an HD switcher with 2 cameras.
So you actually can switch between the 2 cameras with Blackmagic software. And so that's about $1,000 because each card is about $500.
You got these $250.
Each card is $250.
Yeah.
Oh, so $500.
Yeah.
2 cameras, and you're saving about $1 million worth of equipment.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
That's a good deal. I'll go with that.
Where were you when I shot these DVDs? Jesus Louise.
I'm good with that. So that's why you got to listen to the Digital Production Buzz Thursday nights.
Yeah. it's a pretty sweet deal. I mean, and you can also use it. This is the sweet thing, is if you've got an HDMI monitor, you can come straight out of your Final Cut Pro timeline, even if you've gone native HDV.
Will this camera actually capture through that interface?
You can capture through that, but you can go back out when you're editing. You can use this to monitor.
HD. Right, from the card, yeah. But the camera won't actually, will the camera physically record an HDMI signal?
No, it's recording. The camera is, well, that's a camera thing.
Yeah, the camera won't actually capture from the HDMI. It'll just output.
No. And so the camera outputs HDMI, the card captures it. The card, if you when you're working in the Final Cut Pro timeline, you know, you can use one of these nice sweet plasmas with their HDMI connector, and you don't have to convert from HDSDI to HDMI to do it. You just go straight out from your timeline monitor through the intensity card, and you're monitoring, you know, even HDV while you're editing, you're monitoring it in HD.
Wow,
in a relatively affordable manner.
That is very affordable. $250. I mean, you know,
$250 yeah. bucks. I mean, that's like when the FireWire cards came out initially for, you know, for video editing. How much of a market that took off. So yeah. This could be very interesting.
Yep, cool stuff. Philip, how do we get more information on the Digital Production Buzz? What you're up to? News, your tips, all the cool stuff.
You can get the show live on a Thursday night, 6 to 7 p.m., and you can join in the chat live and get your questions answered through to the guests. You can also catch in the podcast afterwards. And if you sign up for a Tips and Tricks newsletter, you can get great tips and tricks for the Final Cut Studio every 2 weeks. All at digitalproductionbuzz.com.
Very nice, Philip. Thank you so much for that great information. See, I've done that new. Cool stuff. If you have that high compressed MPEG-4 format that Sony and now Panasonic are both shipping on with the HDMI connector on.
Yeah.
So, pretty cool stuff. You're listening to the Inside Mac Radio program. Next up, we're going to have our friends from HP talking about cool things for your Mac. We'll be right back.
The Computer History Museum in Mountain View, California is home to the world's largest collection of computer-related artifacts, including rare and one-of-a-kind objects such as the Apple I, the 20th anniversary Mac, and the Palm Pilot prototype. For tours and events or more information, please visit www.computerhistory.org or call 650-810-1010.
Coast to coast and around the world, Scott Shepard is Inside Mac.
Welcome back to the Inside Mac radio program. This part of the Inside Mac show is brought to you by Creative Pro. If you want to find out all the cool tips going on, you can go on over to creativepro.com and get tips and tricks and, you know,
all kinds of anything you want.
Yes, a cornucopia of great information.
At Alice's Restaurant.
That's it. Check it all out. Right now, we're joined by Rick Spillers from Hewlett Packard. We're going to talk about all the cool things that HP's got going with their new products for the Macintosh, and specifically coming up here, HP's got a bunch of cool stuff going on at Macworld. Hey, Rick, how you doing?
Yeah, good afternoon, Scott. I'm doing well. How about you?
Good. So you're here with Scott Shepard and Brad Wright's with us.
Hi, how you doing, Rick?
Hey, Brad,
this is Brad.
So tell us, you guys got some cool stuff planned here for Macworld coming up.
We do. We have a fantastic, huge booth, 40 by 50 foot, that we've had, our traditional booth we've had the last, boy, 3, 4, 5 Macworlds. Right at the entrance to the South Hall, right? You walk through the entrance, there's the HP booth, and there's Apple behind us.
Wow, that's pretty big deal there. What do we have to look forward to from HP for this year coming up at Macworld? We got any, maybe some new things to look forward to, or have you got anything?
Well, there's a couple things. I mean, I think HP offers probably the broadest breadth of Mac Connect products for anybody, ink and laser and scanners, and from consumer up to full-on enterprise. So we're in the booth, we're trying to show a little bit from each category of stuff that we provide. And specifically new stuff, I mean, for this show, we have a couple new scan jets that are brand new technology for HP. 6-color, they get into the infrared range and stuff, so just do fantastic scanning and take out dust and impurities and things like that. So that's one of the new products we'll be showing.
How does the whole infrared thing work in with the scanner deal?
Well, it's just a non-visible light spectrum. So it's things that, you know, it's a light spectrum that CCDs can see.
Right, so this way you can actually enhance an image with that. So.
Correct. And a couple of new printing products, as you may or may not know, we have a few products just recently released a new DesignJet Z-Series printers, 24 and 44-inch wide with 8 or 12 pigment-based inks that are just getting fantastic reviews. They actually have built-in spectrophotometers in the printer, so you can put in some of your specialty paper type, and they can actually analyze the paper and create a profile on the fly for you. Print quality is just outstanding.
So for people that don't know, I mean, what typically happens? If you went out and bought a printer, you would wind up getting specialized paper effectively for that printer. And now you're saying this, like, now you basically can use anybody's paper now with this printer?
That's exactly right, Brad. So you could put in anyone's paper, and the printer's smart enough to analyze the paper and create an ICC profile for you.
Oh, that's great. That's quite cool. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's also, it goes along with our new PhotoSmart Pro B9180, which is also pigment-based ink that does up to 13 by 19. That's getting great reviews with the pro photographers.
Yeah, it's a very interesting printer. What's different on this one than your guys' old wide format printer?
The pigment-based inks, for one.
Yeah.
All of our inkjets to date have been dye-based inks, which have a huge color gamut, but they're dye-based. And then some of the pro guys just prefer the pigments just for what this provides users is now we're up to 200 years archivability.
Oh, wow.
With printouts on this pigment-based ink. So it's truly professional output that you can sell and frame and do what you want.
Hey, Rick, what kind of connectivity do we have on these printers? Is this just a USB port?
With these printers, so across the HP lineup for everything we make, we provide USB and Ethernet and 802.11 BNG connectivity, and these printers provide USB and 10100 Ethernet. But I'm really proud of just the fact that all of our printers from we have something in ink and laser and PhotoSmart that provides, you know, either USB or Ethernet or airport connectivity. Works really very well.
What about the drivers? I mean, effectively, is that one of the things that you know, can be very difficult is that driver support for the Macintosh. I mean, what levels of the operating
system? Oh, this is a great question, Brad. This is something I'm really proud of that the company has achieved. We have full driver support for, 800-plus HP models built into Tiger and Intel Tiger.
Hey, Rick, we're coming up to a break. Can you hold on a sec here?
Yes.
Great. We are here with Rick Spellers from Hewlett Packard. We're talking about some of the cool new technology and great stuff they have coming up for everybody that they can preview over at Macworld. You can check them out over at HP.com or MacworldExpo.com. You're listening to the Inside Mac Show. You're with Scott Shepherd and Brad Wright. We'll be right back.
When it comes to product development and the strategic direction of your business, not everyone can offer you a crystal ball. At the industry measure, formerly Trendwatch Graphic Arts, we're not clairvoyant, but soon it may seem that way to you. With extensive market surveys in the field at least 6 times a year, the industry measure delivers you reliable, projectable market data that makes growing your business seem magical. Digital printing, variable data printing, employee retention, overseas outsourcing, new media, investment projections in the creative, printing, internet, and publishing markets. The industry measure reports the variables that ensure your business never becomes a vanishing act. We measure the information you need in a wide variety of market reports, atlases, special and mini reports, on time and on budget. Hocus pocus? No, just focus. Visit theindustrymeasure.com, your industry data resource. The Industry Measure.
Informal.
Informative.
In front of the industry.
Inside Mac is on.
Welcome back to the Inside Mac Radio program here with Scott Shepherd and Brad Wright. This part of the Inside Mac Radio show is brought to you by Printing for Less, the official printers of the Inside Mac Radio program. These guys are true ink on paper offset printers, not digital photocopier toner guys, true offset printers. Check them out. Great work. You can send them any kind of file. These guys will figure out how to print it. Check them out at printingforless.com. We're here with Rick Spellers from HP, and we've been talking about some of the cool stuff they have planned for Macworld. Rick, anything else we have to look forward to in the HP line for coming up at this year's Macworld?
Well, there's a couple things. One, I'd like to direct everyone to, we have a dedicated website, hp.com/go/Mac, hp.com/go/Mac. And that's our forum for, you know, for all customers and resellers to get information that they need about HP and Mac.
That's a great resource.
Yeah, it really is, and it's and I think we're one of the few companies that offers a dedicated portal to anybody to come in and see what we're doing with our Mac stuff.
Yeah, that is definitely cool. Now, Rick, how do we get more information on what's going on with HP, with Macworld Expo coming up here? Is there any place that has maybe like a show schedule for the booth going on or anything that's happening? They can go find out what they want to do and go check out the cool stuff over at HP.
Well, a couple of things. One, we're in booth number 1502 in the South Hall there at Moscone Center in San Francisco for Macworld. Hopefully, I think we may have something posted on hp.com/go/Mac site there. And lastly, at Macworld, we're working pretty closely with Joel Meyerowitz. We got some really cool stuff going on there. We're going to have a photography and digital experience with a Joel Meyerowitz gallery and a number of HP cameras and printers. And then there's even some Nikon cameras, too, where users can go in, they can go through the whole photo experience and actually print out what they want on the HP printers, from a little 4x6 to our new Pro 9180 to our brand new large format Z3100. So great hands-on experience. That's something I think everyone should go visit.
Yeah, that's pretty cool when you can actually go up and take your file and print it out on a large format printer.
Yes, yes.
And actually see what it looks like. It's pretty good.
Yes.
Cool stuff. So, Rick, more information, we go to
hp.com/go/Mac.
Wow, cool stuff. Hey, I really appreciate you taking out your time out of you know, your busy schedule this weekend to join us on the show and tell us about the cool stuff that's gone on at HP.
Oh, no, thank you very much for inviting me, Brad and Scott. I appreciate it.
Cool. There you go. There you go, everybody. That was Rick Spillers from HP. And like you said, you can find out the cool stuff they got going with their multifunction office printers and scanners. They got a new line of scanners that are actually doing some infrared stuff and some new printers. You can check them out over at HP.com. So
back to Vincent.
I'm back.
He's back. Yes.
Had to go put money in the meter.
Money in the meter because we're in San Francisco.
Oh, 40 yeah. bucks a pop, Brad. Yeah, well,
they just gave me a ticket for not having the meter expire. Literally.
I'm sorry.
On my car, I'm literally getting a ticket and saying, your meter went down. I'm like, I've been monitoring my meter. My meter has never run down. And you just guys just gave me a ticket for not having the meter expire. I think that's getting a ticket because you deserve one. And that's, I mean, I'm going to fight.
You deserve one somewhere. You've deserved one somewhere, young man.
That sometime you were parked and the meter went down, which it never has. But, you know, at some point in your life, it must have expired. So we'll give you a ticket anyways, just for the future.
You know you owe him.
Yeah, you owe him. Just like, it was like a
ticket
tax,
karma. Ticket
like,
karma.
Thank you, San Francisco, for giving me a ticket for not violating the law.
I ride a motorcycle, you know, it's like, okay.
Yeah. Park on the curb.
Yeah. I was like, hey, thanks a lot, guys. You guys are the parking gods of the
here
world.
In San Francisco, they're not quarters. They're parking tokens.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not even going to go into that one.
Yeah, we love San Francisco parking.
Vincent, you're a Nikon professional shooter.
I am.
You're sponsored by Nikon, I believe.
Yes.
How does someone, and we only got 30 seconds now, but when we come back from the break, we're going to have a big, long segment. You know, Nikon's got this D40, D50, D70, D80, D200, we need to figure this stuff out. So either way, we're here talking about all cool things about your Mac, digital photography, you name it. We'll be right back.
You know where you want to go. The challenge is getting there. That's why AGFA has developed innovative solutions that address your current needs while preparing your business of the future. Our chemistry-free CTP is one example. Effortless workflow software and high-productivity inkjet printing are others. We develop technology with your goals in mind because our goal is to help you arrive at your destination efficiently and profitably. Stay ahead with AGFA. Visit AGFA.com for more info.
Momentum for your Macintosh. Scott Shepard is Inside Mac.
Wish to leave a record of your call.
Welcome back to the Inside Mac radio program. This part of the Inside Mac show is brought to you by our friends over at OSXFAQ.com. If you want all the information about your Mac OS X, Unix, TUF, news, you name it, all kinds of cool things going on over there, check them out at OSXFAQ.com. So I'm here with Brad Wright.
How you doing?
And we're back with our featured guest for this hour and our guest co-host for the whole show, the one, the only, Vincent Versace.
Smithsonian honoree.
Yes, laureate.
Excuse me.
Laureate. I knew it was something. I can remember the rewards. You got too many awards. I can't keep them all track.
And I have more degrees than a thermometer.
Yeah.
There you go. I guess back to the Nikon deal. Besides being a Epson Stylus Pro, that you are digging the Epson stuff, you get to play with the 3800 yet?
I have a 3800.
You like it?
Yeah.
It's cool, huh?
Yeah. Why are you asking me?
Oh, dude. No, I mean, it's
dude.
Like, I have.
Well, it takes up no desk space and it prints out these huge prints.
Well, it's 17 by 22.
Right.
Is as big as it goes. And I have 98, 78, 48, 2400 up in the studio, right? And a 96. And I'm putting together a show of my work because I got a couple of galleries that are interested. I'm putting together this thing that I just was in Myanmar or Burma. So I started putting the pictures together and I shot digital infrared and I printed them out on the 24 and then I decided to print them out in the 98. And then the 38 shows up and I put them out on the 38 and it is like, oh
night
my
day.
God.
So much better. Well, it's like, it basically has a whole black and white ink section.
Well, no, the same thing was with the 98.
Oh, I mean, 98 had a black and white ink section.
Yeah, but it's just, what it is, it's a new head technology. And this new head technology it's amazing. They're just amazing prints. And to the point where I have one print where it's like, I didn't know that that was a problem.
You started like sending things in the photograph that you hadn't seen.
I'm like stuff I had not seen. So that one cloud shot I was showing you.
Yeah, that was just, which is killer. That one, I want that one.
Well, I'm going to do one on the 98 for down here. But the difference between the two is night and day. When I'm looking at a 13 by 19 on the 24 and a 13 by 19 on the 38, it is just like, it's profound. It's subtle, but it is profound. You can see it. Everything is just tighter and sharper.
And you really didn't see that much of a jump during the line of printers between all of the different printers which you have, because the 2400 has been a standard printer for the photographer, for like the amateur, pro, semi-pro for a long time.
Well, it is the workhorse printer of my business.
Yeah.
All my portfolio stuff, all my prints that I'm going to show are all done on a 2400. Now, I do a lot of large format printing, but the 2400 is the one that tends to get...
It's the go-to printer.
Yeah, it's like...
Yeah, it's where you
now it's a 38, though, huh?
That's 38. Oh, yeah. 20. Can I borrow your 24 when you're done with it?
I have seven 2400s, right?
You have seven 2400s.
And, part of it is when I go out in the field, I teach, right? So I'll ship those with, but... Mm-hmm. What's nice to do is, like, I can run all the prints at once and be done. Because I average a day and a half a week in L.A. Mm-hmm. So when I'm in the studio in L.A., I have to kind of accelerate things to get all the stuff that I need done. So what I found with these printers is that the 2400 is just spectacular. And the black and white, the advanced black and white mode on all of them, 24, 98, 78, 48, is just spot on. But the 38 is, it's a whole new ball game.
Yeah, it just smokes it. But they all take the... You're actually using the same K3 inks.
Yeah, they're using the same K3 inks.
So it's basically just... It's using the exact same ink, and it's really coming down to the application of the ink.
It's the laydown and the way in which the dots are being made, from what I can see, and that it's just spellbinding. I have this one infrared, since the D70 was the camera that I used, that there's some detail that just wasn't holding. And on the 38, it holds. And,
wow.
I'm always amazed at how I'm being amazed, because you get amazed and you go, you can't possibly
be more amazed than this.
So, and the 38 is definitely something to take a look at, unless you're doing high capacity, high volume printing at that size, and the 48's the call. But if you're doing, you know, you're not just cranking out a bazillion pictures, you're cranking out pieces of art that you want, the 38 is definitely something to pay attention to.
Now when someone goes out and buys a print from you, from your website, let's say, do you actually make the print off the 38 and send it to them?
I do all my own printing. It is complete soup to nuts, because I also, again, hold true to the belief of Ansel Adams, which was the greatest photographers in the world will always be the greatest printers, but the greatest printers are not necessarily the greatest photographers. So you have to understand the entire system, and when you get a piece of art from me, I am involved at every step of the way. I do my own work.
That's pretty cool. You're here listening to Inside Mac Radio here with Vincent Versace talking about digital photography. Vincent is a Epson stylist pro professional photographer that's part of the Epson program. Also talking about the Nikon deal. Let's touch on real quick this new thing that you're into. We have about 4 minutes here left in this segment, is infrared digital. Now, Fuji makes a camera that's a Nikon body, mm-hmm, with their sensor and guts. It's the S3 Pro URIV that does this from the factory, because it's used a lot in forensic.
Correct.
The cops are using these things. The caps are using them.
The caps FBI are using them to analyze checks and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and body fluids and stuff like that.
CSI.
A little bit more information than I wanted to know.
I wasn't going there.
Tell us about you're doing infrared digital.
Well, it was funny. It was a bit of an afterthought. And now I wish that I had taken one of my D2Xs, and I'm actually, I have two of them, and I'm seriously considering taking one of the D2Xs.
But you figured, like, the D70 was a disposable camera.
Well, I had a D70 lying around, mm-hmm, and I shot with it for a year and a half, because I did the point of purchase stuff, some of it, and I did a lot of the advertorial stuff. And what was funny about that camera was I didn't want to like it, and then by the time I got done doing all the work I was asked to do, I fell in love with it, and that was like my workhorse camera, and I just couldn't part with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't using it, and it was like, you know, becoming another paperweight and or bookend. And so a friend of mine, Laurie XL, told me about converting cameras to black and white infrared, and when I shot film, I used to shoot a lot of infrared, so all right, $250, sent it out, had it the IR filter removed, didn't shoot with it for 6 weeks, brought it to Myanmar and started shooting with it, and I am in love.
Wow.
Absolutely some of the most amazing pictures And I'm big into black and white, and I'm telling you, this is just...
This is better. So effectively, this is better than what you used to be able to get with black and white film.
Film dreams of being able to do what this could do. If you want to shoot 1600 ISO infrared, you can. It shoots further into the infrared spectrum than film did. No grain, no contrast issues, totally smooth, creamy skin tone. And there's a couple of little things that you need to do to make it become true black and white, because it's more of a bluish, green, grayish, blackish, whitish thing. But it's very, very simple to do, very simple conversions. And, well, you saw them.
Yeah, yeah, I did see them, and I was really
impressed. Hold on, I'm going to hold up the picture to the microphone. See?
I hope you guys all got that through the airwaves.
Boy, I get it, baby.
Oh. No, but in a couple of weeks when I'm all done, when I was in Myanmar, I shot 4,104 shots or 68 gigabytes worth of capture.
Wow.
And when I get done image editing it, I'm going to put that up on my site. There will be examples of digital infrared, and I'm just hankering to shoot more.
That'll be that one shot of the chili pepper that you shot.
Oh, that'll stop
be
that.
Now, see, don't you wish you were in San Francisco more? Because this time of year with digital infrared would just be...
Rub it in, Scott. Rub it in.
Oh.
Let's go back to talking about which D you wanted to get.
That's what we were going to go to. Which D? Because there's a lot of Ds out there.
Yeah, you're a Nikon guy, so there's this D40, D50, D70, D80, D7 billion. What's this D deal? What does someone want to get that wants to get into digital photography using an SLR camera that's not this, $6,000 body that shoots 20 frames a second for the basketball game? What does someone buy that just wants a good camera?
Well, see, the secret of understanding how Nikon names its cameras is F stands for film. And D stands for digital.
Okay, we're doing good. So you don't want an F.
You know, no.
Well,
you
could, though, because I still like film.
Or some people...
I still think the dynamic range is higher on film. But that's another discussion.
We'll
save that for the Inside Digital Photo Show.
As the man who shoots a lot of film, or shot a lot of film.
Okay, Scott, it's your show.
Yeah, it's your show. We'll agree with you.
Sure. What I'd recommend, again, is getting back to the good as close to the bleeding edge as your pocketbook can afford. And the reason why I say that is buy a camera that is bigger and better than you perceive you are, because you will grow into that. And don't let the limitation of your images be the device that you're using for capture. Let you be the limitation, because you'll definitely grow.
Well, now, I can tell you for a fact that I am definitely a limitation with the equipment that I'm using, because the equipment is better than I am.
But you'll
That's
grow
good.
Into it. That's
well,
good.
We hope so.
Now, take a look at the D200 is a great camera. The D70S, the D80, those would be the cameras that I would use if you don't want to go up to the D2X. Or
I think the D80 is an amazing camera.
I have a D200, and I'm absolutely in love with the thing.
Yeah. Hey, we're coming to a break, but we're here with Vincent Versace. We're talking about printing beautiful images, photography, not image making, photography.
Photography.
We're talking about cameras right now, about Nikon stuff. You're here with Scott Shepard, Brad Wright, and our guest co-host and guest this segment, actually a bunch of segments, Vincent Versace. We'll be right back.
Are you a real estate agent? Then listen up. I've got something for you. NewHomePodcast.com. It's an exciting new way to reach an audience of home buyers that really understand technology and are fascinated with the new podcasts that are springing up everywhere. Now imagine having a dedicated, rabid audience that is in the market to buy or sell a home and wants every edge in getting the latest information. Maybe they're relocating to your area, maybe they're upgrading or downsizing, maybe they're first-time home buyers that are brand new to the process. Well, you can be their guide. And do so with professionally produced, up-to-the-minute podcasts that are delivered automatically to their computers and iPods. And that means sales for you. We make it simple. We do all the online setup, all the production, all the delivery of the podcast. All you have to do when you want to do an episode is make a phone call. Now, we do this on a zip code exclusive basis, and zip codes are going fast. So go to the website to see if your area is still available. It's newhomepodcast.com. That's newhomepodcast.com.
Inside your life.
Business.
Your home.
Inside
your world.
This is Inside Mac
with Scott Shepard.
With Scott Shepard.
Welcome back to the Inside Mac Radio program. We're here with Brad Wright and Vincent Versace.
That's me.
That's right. And you can find more information about the Inside Mac show over at InsideMacRadio.com. Now, Vincent, we were talking D80? What do you think? D200?
D200, D2X. I have two D2Xs, one D200, and a D70 converted.
So the D2X is the top of the line, full monster body, real metal, no pop-up flash, a real professional camera that you can really beat on.
It's a photographic weapon system.
There we go.
And it's a lovely, amazing piece of technology. Now, the D200, which if you look through the window, that's a camera that I generally carry with me wherever I'm like walking around, is wonderful. Lightweight, fast, has a built-in control of the SB800 system, takes flash cards, it's a high megapixel camera, and is a great companion camera to the D2X, D2XS, or a great camera to shoot with. Now, if I was getting into digital photography today, that would be the camera I would seriously look at first as a professional, because it's everything I need it to be, and it's lightweight, and it's reasonably priced.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great camera.
And it's hard to decide. You know, there's so many cameras, it's just crazy. Unless you shoot Sigma, then there's one.
There's one choice. D14, and there's one choice soon. Of lens, too.
And there you go.
There you go. That's what you're getting. Yeah.
Choice is good or choice is not good.
Good, yeah.
So,
I mean, I think it comes down. I mean, I think glass is probably the, you know, I think glass obviously is the most important part of the camera. I think glass makes a huge difference. Angle of view, all of those things. I think it's better to have the money invested in the glass than to worry about the megapixel size of the sensor.
Well, all right, it's like I own all my own glass. I buy my own glass.
Yeah.
And the thing to keep in mind with glass is that the configuration of the lenses changes the look of the camera. Now, the lens that I have out there is a old 70-210 D-series push-pull zoom, which is the magic portrait lens. To this day, I shoot all my portraits with that lens. And people go, oh my God, how come I look so good? You're amazing. No, it's the lens. And I'll give you an example. If I have three lenses at 200 millimeters, I have a 70-210, a 18-200, and 80-400, and I put them all at 200 millimeters.
Mm-hmm.
Math says that all the images should look the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
They don't.
Really?
Okay. The reason why they don't is the configuration of the elements and the grouping.
Inside the actual lens. Right.
The 18-200, even at 200, gives that appearance of wide-angleness. The 80-400 at 200 looks like the image stacks up, compresses a little bit differently than the 70-210. Now, the groupings of the lenses change the way the lens looks, change the way the image looks. So the glass you pick becomes an aesthetic choice. So you have to look at what it is that you like. I mean, the Uber lens, okay, I have an 18-200 lens, which I'll put on my camera when I want to go. Let's say I'm getting on a helicopter and doing helicopter work.
Yeah.
Weight's an issue.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to open up the back of the camera because I might lose the flash card. And I don't want to change lenses because I'm going to blow dirt into the camera. So what am I going to do based on application? I'm going to need wide to telephoto. Okay, 18-200. That's my choice because of application. I'm in the studio and I want to do a beautiful portrait. I'm going to do natural light, 70-210, non-vibration reduction. Why? Because of how pretty it looks. So I start looking at the glass that I have. So I have all the way from 10 millimeters up to 600 millimeters in my lens collection.
Vincent, how do we find more information on your book, your website, Acme Education, all the cool stuff that's going on?
Well, you can go to VersaceFotography.com. It's all listed there. Or you can go to AcmeEducational.com to find out about the book and the DVDs.
That's cool stuff. Vincent, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks.
And you're going to be on Inside Digital Photo, so if people want to go check that out, we're going to talk more in depth about black and white RGB space photography.
Non-destructive spectral conversion, yes.
There we go. Hey, I'd like to thank our guests today. We had Andy Shallot on. We had our friends on, Rick Speller from HP. Of course, Vincent Versace. You've been here with Brad Wright, Scott Shepard. Thank the sponsors. Micromat, DVD, XDV, MC Technologies, FirmTech, and our media partners, Popular Photography and Imaging Magazine, American Photo. We'll be back next week with more great stuff about your Mac.